one of India's most tech-forward political leaders who sees technology as a key to India's global rise. Minister Nara Lokesh, welcome to India, Russia, and the World.
Thank you very much for having. Really appreciate it.
You've been in Russia for a few days now, the most sanctioned country in the world. How do you like it?
It's been an eye-opener. As historically, we've all been educated in the West, but this was a great opportunity to come to Russia, understand what Russia has to offer for India and vice versa. So it's been an amazing experience so far. We have seen the strides that Russia has made beyond energy, metals, now into technology. So I think there's a lot to gain and a lot to exchange.
You were a panelist at the St. Petersburg Forum. It's one of the biggest economic forums in the world. What was that one conversation at SPIEF that you thought was a game changer for your state, Andhra Pradesh?
You know, I think it's very unfair to single out to one conversation. I've had 25 unique conversations that brought in different perspectives to the way India and Russia can collaborate. So honestly, ranging from energy to metals to technology to even a G2G understanding and way forward. Honestly, all 25 conversations were new, were refreshing, and we take a lot back and a lot of to-do list.
You spoke about Andhra Pradesh a lot, of course. That's the state you come from and you represent. Did Andhra Pradesh story at SPIEF feel like India's story?
When states perform, India performs. So Honorable Prime Minister Shri Narendra Modi ji has always been very clear that end of the day, Delhi comes up with the policies and regulatory framework, but execution happens at the state level. So states have to execute. And, you know, it was exciting to hear from different governments in Russia on how they want to not only work with India, but specific states and show tangible results.
You've spent a lot of time both in Moscow and St. Petersburg. I won't say a lot, but significant time.
Two days each.
You've spent also time with Russian officials both in Petersburg and in Moscow. Do you think that Indian cities can collaborate with Russian cities? Is there a scope there?
Absolutely. I mean, I just love the way the Moscow government was prepared for the meeting. You know, we 30 minutes, we were very clear on the way forward, how India can actually collaborate, what technologies that India can offer to Russia and vice versa. You know, we looked at how AI on cameras was used effectively to prevent crime and even collaboration in urban transportation. So definitely in August, there'll be a delegation down here to study the Moscow transportation system and definitely take those learning back home.
You also spoke about Arctic shipping routes and how Andhra Pradesh can attract shipbuilding industries. What scope there is for India there?
See, Andhra Pradesh has the second longest coastline in India, right? And we are very strategically placed on the eastern seaboard. The current geopolitical crisis has definitely opened up new opportunities to connect to the east. And I believe that the Arctic shipping route not only connects Andhra Pradesh better, but also Andhra Pradesh and India can offer itself up for building these icebreakers. And I think that's a unique opportunity that India should tap into.
Minister Lokesh, there was this AI summit that India organized February this year. There was a lot of participation we saw there. It was one of the biggest AI summits in the world, the first in the Global South. There were some $200 billion of commitments that were announced. But what would you say was tangible, real business that came out of that AI summit India organized?
Well, if you look at it, today Andhra Pradesh is attracting maximum number of investment in the data center compute capacity. Not just that, we are also working with all the partners and players who build up the entire ecosystem for data centers. So from power electronics to servers, the whole nine yards is getting built. But beyond the physical infrastructure, India has launched its own AI mission with a clear trajectory on how AI should be democratized, used effectively at the grassroots level. We don't look at AI as a profit-making machine, but we look at AI at the scale of 1.4 billion people using it effectively and enhancing their livelihoods.
China has a state-driven AI strategy. America has big tech driving it. There's Europe there who's trying to regulate it. Where would you say India stands? What is India's AI model?
Democratizing AI. While some countries look at profiting from it, some countries look at regulating it. I believe India, given its scale, should democratize AI, and we are well on our way. As a state, we have said that every family should either actively use AI or create a use case for AI. So 15 million families in Andhra Pradesh can effectively contribute to the India AI mission. I believe that's the significant role that India can play in the entire AI ecosystem of the world.
And India's AI mission, it sounds quite fascinating, but what is it really?
Now, India's AI mission is quite clear on how we can, one, bring in the physical infrastructure, two, how do we build our local models, three, how can we use AI effectively in improving outcomes for our citizens. So AI should not remain a product for the elite. It should not create a greater digital divide. Indian AI mission believes that we should bring both together. And it should help the farmer on the street. It should help the street vendor on the street. It should help the taxi driver or the auto driver. And that's when you would have really unlocked the value of AI.
Our podcast, India, Russia, and the World, it telecasts in 100 plus countries. In many of these countries, perhaps India is still seen as, you know, a land of snake charmers. But can you tell us, for the benefit of our viewers, what India already is doing in the AI sector? How the governments are dealing with people in India?
I'll give you a few examples. We have deployed WhatsApp governance where close to 1,000 services from our government is delivered on a single WhatsApp number. And now it's getting powered using AI. We have one of the finest data of our citizens where we can now enable citizen delivery services in more instantaneously, more proactively rather than being reactive. We are now using AI in digitizing land records and actually delivering services on land records. So AI can truly unlock the potential of governance.
You talk a lot about real-time governance, that is using data to run faster and more efficient government. It sounds honestly very futuristic to me. Is it possible in India?
Absolutely. I mean, I go back from Russia very inspired with the way Moscow government has really transformed its citizen delivery services. A lot of Indians who met me last night were talking about it, raving about it. So I believe there's also a lot to learn from here. And I believe, we have one of the amazing, the best data set possible in India as a state. And we can be more proactive in the way we deliver citizen services. And that's where I believe AI will play a very, very important role.
You know, for me, what's been fascinating is that India is a very diverse country. You could have people who are richest in the world, in Asia and so, but there's also a population that is poor, that is not educated, but they also seem to be using AI and quite perfectly. How did that amalgamation happen?
Well, that's the power of smartphones. India has leapfrogged. We skipped the PC revolution, went straight to smartphones. And in India, innately, we are a tech-driven nation. If you just look at the way we've used UPI, our own payment gateway network, it's amazing. Close to 90 plus percentage of our digital transactions happen on our own sovereign platform. And now we are taking this to the world. So it's amazing how India has sort of been able to leapfrog from being a physical cash nation to now a digital first nation. So these are technologies that we have innovated for ourselves and we can now offer it to the world. So AI, I believe India can contribute substantially.
Semiconductors, they are the new oil. Everyone wants to make chips, but very few countries can actually do that. Where does India stand in this race?
So if you look at it, we have our own mission. There are substantive investments made now in Gujarat, in Assam, in collaboration with global companies. And the idea is we want to build our own capacity. And we want to build our own chips. Eventually, we have to design our own silicon. So that's been our focus. That's been the vision of our Honorable Prime Minister, Shri Narendra Modi ji. And honestly, if he dreams about it, we are here to deliver it.
Mostly, when you talk about India and Russia, its partnership, its friendship, usually at the core of it, we're talking defense. But let's talk AI here. Let's talk about the new digital era. How much scope, how much potential do you see there?
If you look at it, you're absolutely right. The two major investments made into India, one was in Nayara, which is into energy. The other one is into metal that Rusal made in my state. But I believe, there's greater opportunities to work together in technology. Mm-hmm. I've looked at how technology in healthcare is being done by Sberbank. I've had a chance to spend considerable amount of time with them. I've seen their energy solutions that they've deployed in their projects. So it's just amazing that these are technologies that we can take back home, but then scale it, of course, to 1.4 billion people. And that's the unique opportunity and that collaboration between India and Russia has to offer.
But do you think that's the real challenge for India? 1.4 billion people, the largest population in the world. And we're talking about Russia here, where President Putin talks about, you know, having more children, more population. So the very fact that both these countries, India, too many people, Russia, not too many people. Do you think that changes the game? Because when you're trying to implement, whether it's AI, tech, or the new gen digital infrastructure, do you think it becomes complicated in India because of just the number of people?
In fact, I believe that scale helps us. A great example of this is our entire telecom revolution, how scale has enabled to reduce costs and make it so much more affordable. That when mobile phones were launched, it was seen as an elite tool, to the way it's now democratized and how having a mobile phone in the pocket has enabled people to improve their livelihoods, improve their per capita income, where farmers are able to offer the products in the global market. So India offers scale. And that's where I believe that there's an opportunity for Russia and India to work together.
India offers scale. But then we're talking about implementation of AI, which also means replacing humans with machines. You also often talked about how 25 to 30% of all tasks in manufacturing, customer service and data processing could be automated. So, Minister Lokesh, realistically tell me, do you not think that India will lose the advantage it has of the large young labor force?
See, if you look at it historically, every industrial revolution created more jobs than it has replaced. But it has created jobs in countries that were ready to embrace that industrial revolution. Now, India is ready to embrace the AI revolution. So starting from physical infrastructure to building our own models to the entire, transforming our education system, revamping our curriculum in tune to the current AI revolution, we have the full stack, as we call it. And that's where I believe that AI will enable our youngsters to have a better living standards, higher income. So yes, menial tasks might get automated, but then it opens up new opportunities. And that's one area of collaboration for us. So I've had an opportunity to visit School 21, which is the skill development initiative of Sberbank. It's fascinating how we can now replicate that model as is in India.
You think it's possible?
Absolutely. And at 1.4 billion population scale.
India's telecom story is genuinely one of the greatest success stories in the world. A billion people connected, you know, that's a tagline one would imagine. But the global media rarely talks about it. Why do you think that is?
Well, that's a question that we need to ask them. But saying that, you know, India is on the right track. We have amazing technology stacks. We are building it out very systematically. A great example of that is also how mobile phones got integrated to UPI and how QR code has replaced credit card readers. And today, how a pushcart vendor also has a QR code where you can make payments. So India is able to leapfrog. So India's, when we pivot fast. And that is what is India's strength. So we've done that with mobile phones. We've done that with digital payments. And now people do talk about it. But definitely, I think India deserves more attention than it is getting.
There's so many plans for India and collaborations in mind. But then parallelly, we also see a crisis brewing, which is not India's crisis, but it is more or less a world crisis where there are parallel wars going on, global energy prices are going up. Do you think that could derail India's plans of some of this AI implementation, but also the larger plan of India being developed by 2047? That's also Narendra Modi's vision.
Our Honorable Prime Minister's vision is clear, developed India by 2047. So if you look at it, crisis is an opportunity. As I said, when India pivots, it pivots fast. So a great example of this crisis is how we had tariffs on our aqua produce. We pivoted. We looked at our friends in the East. We've looked at Russia as a market. And we moved so fast that we've increased the pie. We managed to double the market. And that is why if you look at it, given all these crises, India's growth rate is still rock solid. We are growing at close to 7-7.5%. Honestly, I believe if all states fire and fire together, India can actually grow at double digits. That's the power of India. And crisis is an opportunity. We've used this as an opportunity to relook at all our regulatory framework. We've looked at removing or eliminating bureaucratic process, mundane process. So we've always used crisis as an opportunity.
But do you not think that India, the global South, South Asia, it's the one that's hit harder? Because like, look where we're sitting. It's a very different demography, right? Russia has oil, India imports oil. So isn't India vulnerable then?
It'll help us to accelerate beyond oil. It'll help us to open up new forms of energy. If you look at it, India is able to tap into its renewable forms quite effectively. Solar, wind, battery energy storage systems, pump storage projects. I mean, our state alone is offering 160 gigawatt of energy production opportunities, right? Across all these four sectors. But saying that, end of the day, base load will be traditional fossil fuel sources coming in. So it help India also make strategic investments as we go about in this sector. And I believe crisis enables us to reorganize our own supply chains.
India was slow to adopt AI. Do you think that its impact on the IT service industry and the overall economy is something that could be felt in the time to come?
You know, when it comes to technology, there are times when India is slow to adapt. But when it does pivot, it pivots very fast. We will pivot. We are in the process of pivoting. And this will definitely enable us to double our income levels. And this is just the beginning. I have seen in the field how AI is used by farmers, by our autowalas, our pushcart vendors. AI is there. People are using it a lot more effectively than I thought they would. And I think it's India's movement.
Farmers using AI. Yeah, it's quite fascinating. It's a small section right now. That's also a fact. And younger farmers.
You will be surprised. So I've had an opportunity to go to the field and I've seen how farmers were taking pictures of the leaves and getting sort of an image processing done with an AI tool and to give guidance on, you know, what pesticide should I use or what fertilizer should I use, how much water I should give. So there are tools there and the youth of India are building amazing tools and everyone's working on it. So competition is there. And because we have a mobile phone revolution and we are, you know, our citizens upgrade their mobile phone almost once every 2-2.5 years. So they have the latest chip on their phone. And that enables them to use such cutting edge technology that honestly the West has not used.
India has also rolled out 5G faster than most countries in the world. Now there's 6G conversations that already started globally. Where do you see India in this new telecom revolution?
I believe India will lead the new telecom revolution. There is a mission that a lot of the equipment should be indigenized and India should contribute to at least 10% of the patents of 6G revolution. So we have a clear mandate. The federal government is working on it very systematically and specific organizations have been tasked on delivering on this mandate. So India will lead it from the front. We will no longer merely be consumer of 6G tech. But we will provide 6G tech to the world at a price point that the world has never seen.
The federal government also has been working on somewhat regulating AI. AI is new. Sometimes it's scary. What are India's AI concerns?
See, AI requires guardrails, like every technology revolution does. But then I believe regulation should not stifle innovation. We should not put the cart ahead of the horse. So it's very important to balance this. Yes, we are discussing ideas like ensuring that kids under a certain age group are not on social media platforms because they are unable to comprehend, appreciate.
Some states are debating that.
Including Andhra Pradesh.
We are
leading the entire conversation. Mm-hmm. And I'm working with Ashwini Vaishnavji at the federal level. And how do we create a regulation around it? So this was done after we've understood the impact, the good, bad, and the ugly of social media. So I believe AI has all facets to it.
Yeah.
And I believe India will harness its energy in its true sense while appropriate guardrails will be placed. But we'll ensure that innovation will not be stifled.
And there's been a lot of debate around whether or not it's fair to ban or regulate AI for underage kids or teenagers. Where does this concern stem from?
See, age-appropriate content. Not all models are good. You've seen that certain models give out content that's not age-appropriate. Imagery that is not conditioned well. So these are challenges that I think society is going through. And it's not just an India problem, but it's a global challenge.
India is also building large number of data centers, which consume significant electricity, which consume significant water. Environment has been a concern in India. How does that balance come about, Minister Lokesh? Because it's not an easy one.
There's this debate happening in the West about data centers. And it's because their grids are broken. They don't have one nation, one grid. While India has one nation, one grid, I can give renewable energy in Andhra Pradesh, draw it all the way in North India or vice versa. So I'm building 160 gigawatts of renewable energy capacity in my state. I have 3,000 TMC of water going waste into the sea. So I'm building a massive project to harness that water. So just to put in context, 3,000 TMC is the annual consumption of Brazil. 3,000 TMC is annual consumption of Indonesia. So what do I need in Andhra Pradesh to deliver on my promise of the data centers? One TMC. One. And it's going to be powered by renewable energies. So I believe that India is positioned very well. This debate is not relevant for India, honestly. It's not at all relevant for India. Today, India is an energy surplus country. Can you believe it? In 5 years, we went from being an energy deficit nation to an energy surplus nation. And water, massive projects are getting built to ensure that we don't waste water. We don't send a drop of water into the sea.
But well, when you compare New Delhi with, say, a neighbor Beijing, there's a lot India needs to do even now.
Absolutely. I'm not saying we've got it all right. But is the intent there? Absolutely. Are policies coming in, enabling to deliver on that intent? Absolutely. In fact, it was the last cabinet meeting where the cabinet has taken a decision to replace all public transportation and commercial vehicles in and around Delhi to 100% EV and hydrogen. It's a mandate now given. And there's an incentive framework. And close to about $1 billion worth of incentives are now being rolled out. So it's not just mere intent, but it's being backed with a policy and we're putting money where it actually matters.
Mr. Modi is due to visit Moscow again this year. And, you know, while the optics of when Mr. Modi and Mr. Putin meet, they're like quite something, the optics. But the substance, what do you expect from the Prime Minister when he comes to Russia? What should he get back home, apart from defense, as we discussed?
Well, honestly, the Honorable Prime Minister opens amazing doors. And then it's the responsibilities of the state, of the states of India to go grab those opportunities. And I believe it's a two-way stream. It's about how in certain sectors that Russia can make investments in India, bring in the technology and vice versa. So I've had conversations with the state governments here on how pharma investments from Indian companies can actually come now to Russia. So the opportunities that we should explore both ways.
My last question, I want to quickly talk about the St. Petersburg forum where you were a panelist in two different sessions. What stood out for you?
Honestly, it's been an eye-opener for me to come to Russia and attend the panels, the specific panel where we spoke about the Arctic shipping route. Honestly, coming from India, you know, we cannot understand or comprehend the opportunities that it actually opens up to us. But being there, learning it from all the experts, from the chairman of Rosatom to the minister from Saudi Arabia, it was just amazing to see the kind of opportunities and how India can fit into the larger equation and create new shipping routes and open up new opportunities for Indians. So I believe there's a lot we've learned, we take back, and there's a lot of to-do list.
Minister Nara Lokesh, thank you very much for your time. You've got a few hours left in Moscow. I do hope you enjoy the city.
Thank you very much for having me. I appreciate it.